Spirit Radio Podcasts.
A report earlier on the week said that charges in relation to your pension funds can see as much as 6 out of every 10 euro of your final pension pot being eaten up by fees. So how can you actually tell what fees you're paying, or can you tell? Does there need to be more transparency? Well, on the line we have the CEO of Ethical Financial, John McNicholas. So I guess that's the first question, John, is somebody now that's maybe read that headline and they're going, okay, I just want to put in the call and say, sorry, what are my annual fees? What do they cost me? Is it easy to get an answer to that question?
No, it's not easy to get an answer, Wendy, and not easy to get a full answer on it. That's the short answer to it. The world of investments and pensions in Ireland there's quite a bit of regulation, and then more regulation and more rules added to it all the time. So the actual rules around transparency, unfortunately, are a bit blurred. So it isn't fully possible if you ring me and ask me can you explain to me the exact cent of what I'm paying on my pension. I can do that on a pension product that is maybe of a higher value, or with the stockbroking firm, or with a firm that's heavily regulated. But one step down from those kind of high end firms, you have insurance companies, you know, Irish Life and Zurich and Aviva and other names you've heard of. They're governed by different rules, so they don't have to fully disclose every cent that's being charged to you.
Why do they not have to do that, John? Because surely you kind of think you're paying into this pot, or sometimes you're paying as an individual, or your company is topping it up sometimes, you know. It's your money that you're planning for your future. So is it not just a simple calculation saying this is what it's costing you to give you the service that we're giving you?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Is it known? Yes, the figure is known, Wendy. Yeah, that figure is known, of the actual charges. All they're required to disclose by legislation is what's called an annual management charge, or you might see it as an AMC somewhere. That isn't the full extent of every cost you're paying. But that's all they have to disclose by the rules in Ireland. You know, they could voluntarily disclose the actual charges if they wished, but that's not the case, and there's a few different sets of rules depending on who you are. If you're a stockbroking firm, you have one set of rules. If you're an insurance company, you have a different set of rules of what kind of charges you have to disclose. And therein lies the problem from my end, Wendy. There is a lack of transparency around fees. There is, and particularly with insurance companies.
It's a bit of a contradiction in terms of the government might need to push for more transparency, because on the one hand we're all being encouraged, you know, you need a pension outside of the state pension, but on the other hand, you know, you might have people listening, John, at the moment, especially younger people anyone who's strapped for cash at the moment, saying, well, why am I going to put money into a pension when so much of it is going to be depleted?
Exactly. It's a good question, Wendy, of what's a reasonable fee to pay for a service, you know. So obviously if you want to have a pension with Irish Life, you need Irish Life to exist. You need them to be able to, you know, pay their own staff. If you need to ring them up to ask a question or to change something, you need there to be someone to answer the phone. So of course there are costs involved in it, and, you know, investing isn't, you know, ABC. It's not basic, so you need to have people who have a good knowledge base. You need to pay them. So I'm kind of in the middle of the camp in that regard. You do need to pay fees. It's not possible to get to a 0% fee base, you know. So I'm not too sensitive about telling people that there are charges. I think that goes with any...
But we still need to know.
So then you can
compare and say, okay, well, this pension fund, it will cost me this much. And would that not allow for better competition as well?
Yeah, it would. Yeah, I have no problem with that, Wendy. I mean, it would be much simpler. What we're really asking for here is just one set of rules. It's for not for more legislation particularly. It's just for one set of rules that are the same for every firm in the country. And that would be, they could do that voluntarily, but usually you need a little nudge in this direction. So I think that would be a good direction to take. So you're right, a reasonable fee. The best place to start with what the reasonable fee is, what are the actual fees? And then you can compare and make an educated decision on it, you know.
You can't really. Finally, just to ask you, John, just for someone who's listening and, you know, they saw that headline and they're going, oh my goodness, I've paid so much into my pension fund. What should I do about it? I want to make sure that this isn't happening to my money. What can they do at this moment before we, in the absence of these rules?
Yeah, and the absence of rules, I suppose, is just to, at least make sure that the fees you are paying what you the little you do know in the fees to actually understand what they are, you know, even to understand what your annual management charge is, what your and the other big question is in the pensions world, Wendy, is a bit technical now, a bit boring, but what the allocation rate is. So if you've been in €100, how much is actually allocated into your pension plan? So start by finding out those bits of information at least, you know, and that'll be, they're at least transparent. You can at least get that information, and that's a good starting point for it. Yeah, look, it really is to take, I think most advisors who are in the industry can give a relatively good handle on explanation of what the fees are and get close enough to the right figure of what they are paying, you know. It'd be much simpler if it was accurate. But in the absence of that, you can get to someone who knows what they're talking about, you know, knows what they're talking about and give you a good handle on fees, you know.
Yeah, it's a starting
point. And there are pensions, Wendy, that the problem with them is that you usually have to have, you know, probably €100,000 or more in your pension before you get to the higher set of rules for the kind of stockbroking or the heavily regulated firms. Then you can have full transparency over every cent. So I think if you have a larger pension fund, it's reasonable to expect that. So you should push a bit harder to get push a bit harder to your advisor or to whoever your provider is to get
the right answer. Thanks for that advice. That's John McNicholas there, CEO of Ethical Financial. And if you want to get in touch with John, you can go to his website, which is ethicalfinancial.ie. Spirit. One of the things that we love doing here at Spirit Radio is just playing our broad range of music, from Christian contemporary music to just what's the latest in the charts. And with me on the line to talk through some of the latest music on the Spirit Radio playlist, I have Spirit Radio's Garvin Rigby. So Garvin, what's the first song you've chosen to highlight today?
Yeah, sure, of course. So what we normally do is go through some of the new and recent music on Spirit Radio and kind of some of the songs we've added or listeners will be able to hear or have recently heard or will start to hear in the next few days. And one of the main artists we play, I suppose, for the last 10 years is a guy called Matt Carney. And Matt is basically the Christian crossover artist, so he's basically fairly much featured in mainstream charts in the adult top 40 and things like that, and also in the Christian top 40 as well. So he's better known as Matt Carney with one T. By the way, it's always hard to find Matt Carney when you're looking for two T's online. The song is called Anywhere With You, right? So it's a really powerful song. The funny thing about this is that he actually wrote the song before quarantine. It's about traveling a ton, and basically he's seen a lot of places, but when he's traveling as a musician, he sees a beautiful location and he doesn't necessarily have the person he loves with him on tour, and seeing all these great places, and he loves to travel. Anywhere With You is the name of the song. So that's what it's about. We'll play a little clip of the song and I'll tell you more of the lyrics. So much you want to see alone. If I can picture your silhouette in the summer, no regrets. It felt like a thousand breaths, a thousand steps, and no.
Anywhere With You. It's quite bubbly. It's kind of uplifting as well, even though he's talking about, you know, wanting to have the person with him traveling.
Yeah, I think it's a very uplifting song. It's a good message as well. You know, he wants to travel, he wants to go anywhere with you, because as he said himself, he's traveled a lot and been able to see a lot of places. There's a feeling that when you get to a beautiful location, you're with the person you love, you can spend that time with the person. But when you're not with that person and you want them to see all these fantastic places, that's what's missing. So that's Matt Carney, Anywhere With You. The next artist we have is Bryn Elliott. The song is called Tell Me I'm Pretty. Now, Bryn is an American singer-songwriter. Again, Bryn, hard spelling, B-R-Y-N-N. As opposed to Brian. And Bryn Elliott, basically, she sounds a little bit like Taylor Swift. You'll see why we play the song in a moment. But she's toured with people like Alanis Morissette, and her new song tears down the stereotypical constraints of living up to the unrealistic standards of beauty. Women are pressured to look a certain way and expectations of living by societal norms. And this song is basically a kind of internal strength. It's about a strength kind of to tell yourself that you're pretty no matter how people feel or see you. And that's, I think it's a powerful message in the song. And the song is called Tell Me I'm Pretty. We'll have a listen to this. Maybe this is kind of dumb. I've been so caught up in pleasing you. I got lost in the likes and views. It's been way too long since I've looked in the mirror and saw the true. Maybe sometime long ago, I forgot what I should have known.
is. A bit of Bryn, Elliot, and Tell Me I'm Pretty. You're right, Garvin. I think it's really powerful, especially for young girls, you know, who really need positive and powerful role models, where she's just kind of saying, do you know what? It's about having your own self-worth and just trying to stop caring about what other people think, which isn't easy. So it's great
exactly
to have such a message like so positive, for especially for young women in particular.
Exactly. Basically, her message is it's about finding true beauty and freedom and a real human in the world, not necessarily obsessed with image, you know? So that's, and look, you probably heard Taylor Swift in there somewhere, so it certainly has a Taylor Swift vibe to her, and certainly in that song, Tell Me I'm Pretty. And finally, is Mercy Me. Look, we don't need to introduce Mercy Me, one of the biggest Christian artists of all time. You know, 13 consecutive top five singles, lots of number ones, 8 Dove Awards. You know, where do we go from there? So Mercy Me, their latest song, we've been playing it for a few weeks now, it's called Say A One. Now, this is one of the most powerful songs I've heard, and certainly Spirit has played it a lot of the time. A lot of listeners have been commenting that this song is really inspirational for them and through difficult times. And what I think is amazing this is basically it's about... I got a song written about a guy called Gary Miracle. Now, that's his real second name. Miracle is his name. In January 2020, Gary had all four of his limbs amputated after falling into septic shock. Miracle, which is his real name, he was a long-time associate of the band. And basically, the song pays tribute to Gary Miracle's bravery, positive attitude, and faith in the power of Christ as he determines to continue to live life to the fullest. You know, I can see my life for the very first time through a different lens. That's some of the lyrics of the song. And one of the most powerful things, I think, is in the song, the lyrics, which is a fantastic lyric. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength to keep on saying I won't, and I'll keep proving you wrong. So people say you can't walk again, you can't do this in your life. You know what? He says, yes, I can. I can do anything. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. So go watch the video. It'll tear you up, so make sure you have a tissue if you're going to watch it. Mercy Me, Say I Won't. Look it up. Mercy Me, Say I Won't. Look up the video on YouTube. Have a look at the video and listen to the song lyrics.
Garvin, thanks so much for that music update. Spirit. Have you ever had something happen to you that completely changed your perspective on life? There was no going back after it happened to you. Well, that's kind of what happened to the disciples. And it's hard to imagine, but my next guest is going to help us with that. That moment, that light bulb moment multiplied by 1,000 when they realised Jesus had risen from the dead. On the line to talk about this, I have Gary McDell, who's minister at Greystones Presbyterian Church. So let's start with that, Gary. What do you think it might have been like for the disciples at that time when they realised Jesus, that's Jesus here, he's risen from the dead?
Well, good morning. Yeah, it's hard to imagine, isn't it? Here was someone that you knew had died, you saw him on a cross, laid in a tomb, and here he is. When I think about the Gospel of John, here he is standing in a room with you. He just appears in a locked room, you're trembling, you're frightened, you don't know what's going to happen to you, and suddenly your best friend, your Lord, your Master, is there. It just changes everything. I'm sure it must have been confusing for them, but it says they were overjoyed, and no wonder. I mean, how could you take it all in, though? But it was that light, but it was an explosion.
And what do we know, Gary, just from Scripture and just historical evidence as well, about their reaction? Did it dawn on them all at once, or was there disbelief, fear, mixed emotions, probably?
Yeah, I think so. It took a while for it to sink in, I am sure. But their initial reaction was joy. When they heard about the empty tomb, it would have been confusion, maybe disbelief. And even when the disciples saw Jesus, there was one that was missing, and that was Thomas. I don't know where he was, but he's maybe a bit like me, just getting late. But when he arrived and they said, we've seen the Lord, he said, I don't believe it. I won't believe it until I see him for myself. I can put my finger in the nail prints in his hand and my hand in his side. I just won't believe it. And then a week later, Jesus came and stood again and says, Thomas, you wanted to see? Here you go. And it doesn't even say that Thomas actually touched him. It just said he fell on his knees and said, my Lord and my God. It was just life-changing. This was the climax of the Gospel of John. My Lord, my God. It just changed everything for those guys.
Is it, in a way, Gary, is it kind of like the emotions that we might feel at different stages of our faith journey? You know, doubt, disbelief, fear, awe, wonder, all these different things we might experience at different times.
Yeah, and we will carry those all the way through our journey. We don't go from point A to point B in a perfect line. Yeah, our lifetime will be filled with that. But as we look at those disciples and see that they turn from fearful disciples into bold preaching ones. Thomas, who wouldn't believe, I mean, the tradition has it, he went to India and just brought the gospel. He was martyred. I mean, all these guys, except for John, were martyred for their faith, and something dynamic happened. And even the like of Paul encountered Jesus on the road to Damascus. That was life-changing for him. This guy who had everything in life, he had this, it was the top of the social tree, and he met with Jesus, his life dramatically changed. But he had found real life. He had a complete new perspective. And I think that's for us as well, that Wendy and I, as we look at the Easter message, it's just not a nice story. It should change our view on everything. This day last week, I went up Downs Hill. Have you ever walked up Downs Hill? It's in the Glen of the Downs here in near Greystone.
I've got better put it on my list, so.
You should. It's gorgeous. This day last week was a gorgeous day, and the view from the top, you see the sea, you can look down the coast, you can see Wicklow, and you get a whole new perspective on the geography of the place that we live in, that we walk and drive every day. And it's a bit like that with this resurrection experience. To know that Jesus is raised changes everything. You see everything from a new perspective. Paul said, you know, for me to live is Christ. Everything was about him. And to die, it put a new perspective on death, because death is not the end. For Jesus had risen from the dead, and because he did, we can. And it kind of, I think, puts in perspective even COVID, the challenges of that, or all the things that life brings along, the heartache, the joy, the illness, the losing people, all of those things. It puts it in a new perspective, a God perspective, the real, this is really seeing. So we can really live, yeah. Because Jesus lives.
And that's the perspective that we can look at too in our lives. Maybe finally, that would be my last question to you, Gary, is just people going, okay, I can understand the disciples thought, you know, Thomas even said, you know, he doubted and then he saw and he believed. But, you know, I wasn't there. So how do I have that same sense of belief and then following on from that change of perspective?
Yeah, I know. Thomas wouldn't believe, and Jesus kind of told him off and said, well, you know, blessed are those who don't see and can't touch but believe. But we've got these amazing records, which are accurate eyewitness records. And we believe on the testimony of another, in a sense. You know, everything that we do is we're told, you know, we believe our teachers, we believe, but here it is. But we can know him for ourselves because he gives us a spirit. And as we trust him and live out this action of faith, then we see, actually, well, God is alive in me, and this is true, and he helps me through my weakest moments, and he helps me through my toughest times, and he helps when I'm on the mountaintop experience. It can become real if we embrace it for ourselves. He will live in us. And just, that's what my final thought, Paul wrote in Philippians chapter 3, verse 10, I want to know Christ. This was his ambition. I want to know Christ. Not just know about him. We know lots about him. But I want to know him and the power of his resurrection. So he wanted reality in his life. And that's what we all want. We all want this reality. And some of us will be thinking, sometimes I just feel I'm playing a game or I'm treading water. But actually, it's possible to know him and to know the power of his resurrection in all our lives.
Spirit. The EU Commission is aiming to expand the list of EU crimes to include hate speech. And also here in Ireland, there's going to be new hate crime laws that are looking at inciting hatred on social media, and they could carry a prison sentence of up to 6 months. But are we at the behest or at the mercy of whoever is actually judging the speech? That's the question that I'm going to put to my next guest, psychotherapist, author Stella O'Malley. Stella, we might start with that, is with various different pieces of legislation being looked at in Ireland and the EU. Can the definition of hate speech be interpreted in different ways?
Yeah, that's the nub of the issue, because there is no international legal definition of hate speech. And so for one group, they could call it hate speech. For another person, they could call it, you know, challenging a hate regime. So if you lived in, you know, Moscow in the 1920s, you could be called, you know, a person who was hate speech, and somebody else would say you were a political dissenter. So who determines what the hate speech is the real issue here. And so because there is no actually legal international definition, it's become very, very controversial. So, for example, in Ireland, we are proposing a bill that, you know, you can't, and most of it sounds decent, and then some of it seems a little bit inappropriate. So at the moment, the bill says that hate speech is understood as any kind of communication in speech, writing, or behaviour that attacks or uses pejorative or discriminatory language with reference to a person or group on the basis of, and it's on the basis of, their religion, their ethnicity, their nationality, their race, their colour, their gender or other identity factors. And you could kind of go, yeah, that sounds fair enough, that sounds fair enough. I personally would object that the sex of a person isn't in there, so that misogyny is disregarded. And so a hatred towards women, which is well established, and the entire kind of concept of feminism has been fighting against it, certainly is disregarded. Also, the kind of inclusion of gender to kind of trump sex means that anybody who declares themselves a woman can be a woman. And so that kind of brings in huge issues for women who are in the prisons. But at the moment, there's 3 trans women in the women's prison in Ireland. And it would be hate speech to challenge this. And yet one could argue that the women in prison are the most vulnerable in society. And perhaps we should be allowed to challenge situations like this thoughtfully, respectfully, without any sort of hate speech, but with the freedom to speak about issues and say, is this appropriate? Can we just look at it? Should there be a third space where trans women are put? Because if they have intact genitals, which all 3 of the trans women in the prisons have, then there are other issues that could impact the women in the prisons. Now, that's just one example that springs to mind. But there are loads of other examples, because it says it's wide. And so what I would really have a huge issue about would be who's, let's say religion is another one, and maybe one religion becomes the ruling kind of religion of that country, and then they decide that all other religions is hate speech. That bill allows that to occur.
It seems that it's so broad.
Where's the atheist? It's too broad, and it's too dependent on who is calling the hate speech. And so atheists are immediately, if they're going to challenge somebody's religiosity, they are immediately in a very precarious and vulnerable position. Or one religion saying to another, and that's very often an aspect, you don't need me to tell you, but an aspect of religion is to kind of proclaim the good word. But that could be, if you were kind of telling a Muslim, or if a Muslim was telling a Christian about Allah or God, you could argue to that extent that this is hate speech because you are oppressing me, because you are saying Allah
and
doesn't
exist.
Wide open to interpretation.
Is that the biggest issue, Stella, that it's so open to interpretation and it could be subjective? One of the things that Justice Minister Helen McEntee said, that in the Irish legislation, they'll look at what they're calling bias indicators. Now, that could mean anything. And there does seem to be a particular focus on gender expression and identity in the Irish bill. Are you concerned, and I know you've written about it and you've done a lot of work on it, that, for example, a discussion around the transgender issue, we've talked before with you about, you know, the vitriol directed at people like J.K. Rowling for just trying to have, you know, basic discussions and just seemingly, what many would argue, would just kind of thoughtful questions, asking questions rather than making judgments or assertions. Would you be afraid that legislation like this might actually further impinge freedom of debate and expression?
I very much would be. I'm afraid. I think civilised conversation is the only way to go in a civilised society. I think if you suppress speech, you're going to suppress thought. And with that, everything goes underground and we're worse off as a society. We should be allowed to ask questions. I was brought up with the idea that there's no such thing as a silly question. And we should be allowed to question things. We should be allowed to question the status quo. And that should not be termed as hate speech. And for anybody who doesn't know or hasn't bothered to check, I urge you to go and read up what J.K. Rowling said. Because what she said, and when you read it, will shock you that this has been termed hate speech, because it's so far from hate speech. So yes, it seems very arbitrary and random that the Irish government have chosen to emphasise gender identity and gender expression within this unnecessary hate speech law. Can I remind you, we live in a progressive society. We already have laws around racism. We already have a law around inappropriate discussion, libel. We already have this. We don't need extras. You know, we are working quite well. Some would say that we are already quite oppressive. I don't actually think we are. But we certainly don't need extra. And it feels arbitrary and it feels over the top to be bringing in new laws that aren't needed, that have already been catered for in other laws, and that will be so dependent on whoever is declaring what is hate speech.
Stella, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. The subjective nature seems to be the real issue there. That's psychotherapist, author and founding member of the International Association of Therapists for Desisters and Detransitioners, Stella O'Malley there. My next guest is a farmer and sheep shearer in Sligo. He's turned his love of farming and business into a brand and a podcast series. It's great to have with me on the line Carl Devaney. He is the founder of Unit, which is a podcast series and farming clothing brand. So we might start with that. I know that your family, Carl, has been farming and sheep shearing for generations. So how did you go from that to saying, hey, I want to do a podcast?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on it, Wendy. Probably the short answer to that is I'm a big fan of Joe Rogan. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, indeed.
He's got one of the biggest podcasts in the world.
Yeah.
And, I listen to it and I quite enjoy it. And it's really cool the way he gets like different people on, and he pursues his own like intellectual curiosities. Like, he'll get a fitness person on, or he'll have a friend of his on and have a bit of fun and have a couple of beers over the mic. So I kind of thought to myself, maybe a farming version of that would be good, and it'd be something that I'd enjoy doing.
Okay, so that was the first inspiration. But then how did you actually sit down and go, okay, what sort of topics am I going to cover and how am I going to actually put it together?
Well, I guess I'd be naturally quite a big overthinker, but I thought to myself here that, look, whatever I decide to do, it's probably going to be a couple of years, I thought at the time anyway, before it takes off. So I'm as well just hook into it and learn it, you know, because it's weird. Like, interviewing is kind of a subtle art. Like, it's hard to know if you're good at it or if you're doing well at it. So, to be honest, I just got the phone and got a pair of 10-year headphones and signed up for podcast hosting online. And I got my sister Joanne on as the first guest and started doing weekly shows from then on. And I just thought to myself, I'll fire first the name later.
It's a good way to go about it, and it seemed to have worked for you, Carl, because you've had something like 14,000 downloads since you started only a year ago.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, we'd be up on the year now. It's probably only about 2 weeks away now, and we'll hit the 15 for the year. So it's not a bad start for sure. Sometimes a celebrity start podcast that can make a big enough splash, but because I had no prior audience, so, and it's only farming. That's a niche within, so I was happy enough. Yeah, it's not too bad.
And tell us about some of the guests and the topics that you've covered.
Yeah, well, it's been pretty wide ranging in all the topics of farming. So I'm obviously a passionate sheep shearer, so I've had some great shearers on, world record holders and that. So I've loved them shows. And then I've had some friends on, but I've also wanted to learn about other aspects of agriculture that I wouldn't have been exposed to, let it be crops or dairy farming. And then also got some, influencers within the Irish farming space, people like Tommy DeVette, and then some researchers too, Dr. Shane Conway. And it's a good old list. I'm happy enough when you look back at it.
A lot of work has gone into it over the last year, and it's paid off. And as if you weren't busy enough, you've decided, okay, I need a bit more of a challenge. Tell us a little bit about the clothing brand that you launched.
Yeah, well, I actually was doing a bit with it. I actually launched in 2018, but then I did agricultural science in UCD, and when I came into final year, I was very busy. So I just kind of, I closed the store, paused it, but the social media was still there. But every couple of weeks nearly, I was getting a message from people saying, no, I tried to get in and buy a hoodie or buy a T-shirt, and I couldn't. Is there any way, are you going to open it up soon or whatever? So I kind of always had it in the back of my mind that, no, like it can be hard, like if you start a business, to get one that people like and that actually sticks. Like, and this one seemed to have been quite popular. So when the podcast was gaining a bit of traction, and we got the summer shearing over us, and I had an extra few minutes here or there, I kind of said to myself, why don't I launch a unit again and see what happens? And we launched a week before Black Friday and just kind of the Black Friday and Christmas season, which I only actually realized then that's the busiest time of year for e-commerce or for clothing. And we had a great first month out the gate, so I said to myself, all right, I'm a business owner now.
Yeah, the reality dawned on you. And you've got the podcast, you've got Unit, but you've also got lambing season at the moment. How's that going?
It's very busy. I guess with sheep farming, like a lot of farming, it's seasonal, and this is probably the most important season of them all, because the lambs are coming out. They're all the sheep are going to lamb together within about 3 weeks to a month. So, and they're fragile when they're born, like, so you're just trying to save as many as possible and get round to them and do your best. So yeah, it's pretty busy.
What's the fastest you can shear sheep in, Carl?
What's as fast I can shear sheep? It's a difficult question. How long is a piece of string? Because you can get big sheep, small sheep. You can get difficult ones, easy ones. I've done a lamb in 27 seconds. That's probably the fastest I've done. But like that would be for a speech here competition. So the lamb is like, you know, the wool is taken out around some of the more difficult parts, and it's just sort of, you know, quick body blows left. But some of the best shearers in the world can get them down into 17, 18 seconds. So I have a bit to go yet.
Yeah, you'd be sweating, all right. Well, Carl, thanks so much for joining us on the show. It's great to hear such a good news story of all that's been happening for you. That's Carl Devaney, the founder of UNIT. It's a podcast series and a clothing brand as well. If you want to find out more, you can go to the website, which is unitapparel.com, and you can also find them on Facebook as well.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie. Yeah.